yell, so the men came to learn and the women came to hear. And they heard the simple shot, Shuti Advarim. Torah Shabbat Sabbath is generally fairly, relatively speaking, easy. Well, it's not so easy, but shot. That will happen at Hakel. But the more difficult segment, Rambam felt was considered to be more problematic. Torah Tanima, famous Perish and Chumash, on that pasuk in Parshat Eker, that will happen in Hakel. But the more difficult segment, the Rambam felt was considered to be more problematic. Torah Tanima, famous Perish and Chumash, on that pasuk in Parshat Eker, Menachem Elov and Osechem, says as follows. Quote from Mayan Ganim, which is printed in Venice in the year 1553. Wow, goes back quite a few years. I'm not sure when it was written, but printed in 1553. So this idea of Tiflis is taught when Av Malamda Bekatnusa. You don't know what kind of young lady she is. We're afraid, she's going to go out, she'll wait that she won't understand it. She'll have the patience for it. But women are Shadnada, Liba, No Son of the Karbal, Amalokha, Malekas Hashem. Paraphrase this week's parsha of the Mishkan. Yitzad Bechi Rasan, Yitol, Vimashu Tov. You pick what is good, what is good. Hein Heina, Talena, Bahar Hashem. They should go up on the mountain of God. Tishkona, Vimkon Kosho, she'll dwell in his holy place. Kiddushay, Mo'face, Haman, Haina, they're wonderful women. Balchach Meidoran, as I was incumbent upon the wise men of the generation. La'adron, La'adron, the Sadron, to purify them, to make them great, to give, put them in order. L'chazik, Yedeyan, La'ameis, Roseyan, to strengthen them. He's talking to a lady. Do and be succeed, and from heaven they will help you. Therefore, it's clear that if a woman is has intention, kavanas a little more before libo, the God al sichlo is the idor writing. The Chaim Yosef David Azuloy, one of the great condolences. Quite a while ago, not in the modern era, says then, Mutta le'avio lachem lamda, her father and others can teach her. We see in the Gemara and Pesachim that they taught Ruria Torah Shalapeh. And in the Tosefta, she's quoted. Ruria says this, and others say that. Really, exists. There are even chidushim which are quoted from ladies in the chiddush, the famous chiddush and the mother of the Drisha, who lived, let's say, a long time ago, probably in the around the year 1600. She had a chiddush, as we mentioned in the last term, but candlelighting on Yontif, candlelighting on Shabbos, you're supposed to first light and then say the bracha. So she said on her own, it's her chiddush. And the yontif is the other way around, she first went to bracha and then light. There's a whole fight, is she right or is she wrong? She's right, she's wrong. And this, that whole pilpul about what the mother of the Drisha said. Then he quotes the Makor Baruch. Oh, Makor Baruch is written by Baruch Epstein. This is one of the famous stories. But the Nitziv, the house of the Nitziv, the women studied. I think it's in Mishnayos or Gemara, I don't want to say. All I know is there was a book came out in English. My uncle did it too. You hear that book? Yeah. One of the most famous books. My kids, it's literally, it patterns in my house. My kids read it and reread it and reread it. Someone asked it. They sent it to us, and we got to learn in the mail the next week. Don't read it. We retract it. So that was it. Once that happened, that book is the most popular book of my whole house. For the Chumash Rashi, I think everyone read that book, and it's literally in tatters. It's all to pieces. So there he writes about the study Torah, and Rabbi Schachter from the Jewish Center wrote a whole article about this in the Torah Mada Journal some years back, in which he said that even the English, which was then retracted by the sponsor, was a sanitized version. But there it didn't say the whole truth. I think it's in the Gemara, and it came to Mishnayos, and they kept a few little... And even that wasn't there. There were people very upset about that. But in these houses, they had a tradition in Lithuania, the houses of the Rabbonim, that the women were very scholarly. That was their tradition. The man had no son. Oh. He had no son, so he had to get it out, you know? So his daughters are even more learned. That's happened very frequently. More recently, a great man named Rav Zalman Sarutsky, who lived already in our times, he was there at the Kantar Stroh, the Sofiyomovich during the war era. Around that time, Yerushalayim. He says, now it's so critical to have schools for women. Absolutely critical. The question is, what about Torah Sheva'al Peh? So Satmar Rebbe says, if you're going to teach your daughter Chumash, I can't stop you. But don't you dare teach her Rashi. Not in the river, by your own emotion. No heaven to learn Rashi. And he's right. Torah Sheva'al Peh. No question that he's right. Satmar Rebbe is right that Rashi is Torah Sheva'al Peh. No. Is there anybody here who went to any girls' school that didn't study Rashi? Raise your hand. I guess no one wants to stop them. Okay. How can you do it? How can you do it? Seems to me the answer is quite clear. That although Rashi is really Torah Sheva'al Peh, but there's no prohibition, it's not an absolute prohibition against Torah Sheva'al Peh. No such thing. It's what you might call a relative prohibition. If it's going to cause tiflus, it's going to cause a negative result, then you shouldn't do it. Apparently the mechanchim and mechanchos in the various girls' schools recognize that the proper way to teach Chumash is to teach Chumash with Rashi. Not about studying Torah Sheva'al Peh as such, not attached to the Chumash, but independently. Rav Moshe writes in his tshuva, you shouldn't teach Mishnayos. Writes here, this is Rabbi Halichos Beisa, Halichos Bas Yisro, well, there's some schools where they teach Mishnayos once in a while, a Mishnah here, a Mishnah there, but not Shiur Mishnah. And then he says, Ein Nilmon Mishnayos B'Kviyus El Al Pi Horoz Chochem. So you already left it out. You can't shouldn't have Mishnayos for Kviyas unless you have what we call a Ros Chochem. If you have a Ros Chochem, he doesn't say Ein Lecho Chazir El Al Pi Ros Chochem. Obviously, even he, although he's according to Rav Moshe, he shouldn't have Mishnayos. He's saying leaving it out because it's a Ros Chochem, and the Chochem feels in this particular time and place that studying Mishnayos would be a good thing for the women. Then, if he's a proper Rav, then his sock has validity. Rav Moshe said that women should not be taught Mishnayos. At all. Pirkei Avos. It's out at the bottom that there are some schools where he doesn't mean modern schools. This is you know, where this man's coming from. He's talking. He lives in Makassar, upon the mirrors. Yeah, this is not, you know. He has a scummers from the Abed of the Eda Haredis, Diane Weiss. Rabbi Bodner from Bnei Brak, Rabbi Shonner from Makistov, Rabbi Halberstam from Eda Haredis. two out of four Menacharedis. This man's not coming from, I don't know, from Rehavia or Tel Aviv. He's coming from Menacharedis. Still, even he says that, you know, sometimes you have to have the Rod's Kochum. You could say that his time and place is important. That we have to teach a Mishnah, Mishnayos for women. He's like this. You know, Mishnayos, Mikvius, a Mishnah, an occasional Mishnah, probably even in the Haredic schools they have. Apparently, the same impression I received from this. The Mishnah, Mikvius, Daniel says it's no good unless it's a Ross Kochum. Because the Kochum is okay, so it's okay. So why should the Kochum say it's okay or not okay? It all depends on the time and place. I received a phone call last night. I'm not telling you this, an alta maisa. Last night I received a call from a rabbi from some town, city. West of here. I don't want to give any secrets. West of here. And apparently in this town, they have a girls' school. The school is run by, I guess you might call it a more modern, what we call modern Orthodox, I guess. And they have an option of Torah Shabbat prayer for women. If they want to study with Mishnah tomorrow, I don't know exactly what. It's an option. So a certain rabbi got up in that town and said, this is absolutely prohibited. And no rabbi ever permitted it. Not Rabbi Soloveitchik, and not Rabbi X, and not Rabbi Y, and not Rabbi Z. No one ever permitted it. So the rabbi called me up and said, what's going on here? That's not what I was told, says this other rabbi. But you're right. There are rabbis who permitted Torah Shabbat prayer for women. If I'm not mistaken, maybe someone can correct me here. Anyone here from Elizabeth? Anybody from Elizabeth? Nobody? No one? School Elizabeth, yeah? I was told that they had Mishnah, Shir Mishnah, Mikvias Elizabeth. Is that true or not true? So, okay, they call it right. I mean, call it brewery, I mean, you know. So, that's the school she's under by Tights since its inception. Tights considered to be, nothing wrong. Some other rabbi went to tell me, he's wrong. And this, or Ross Kochum. He felt in his town that that's the proper thing to do. Now, for Mishnah to Gemara, not the same, I agree. Not the same, but if you're going to be strict with structures, then it really is the same. But then it seems the Chumash Rashi is also the same. There's a symposium and a magazine called Tradition. It was the last year, the year before, about women's Torah study. And one of the rabbanim there strives mightily to draw a line, a wedge between Chumash Rashi on one end and Mishnah and Gemara on the other hand. I think it's 100% right from the perspective, you know, we call the general perspective of what's good and what's bad in women's education. I happen to agree on many of his points. But I do think that if you're going to be an absolutist, you have to concede that Satmar Rebbe is correct. That Rashi is the same thing as Mishnah and Gemara. So I think that's one of two options. Either an absolutist and say that Rashi is the same as Mishnah Gemara, you have to either prohibit it all or permit it all. We have to be a relativist and say, look, the whole prohibition, Torah Shabbat Sabbath, is also prohibited. So the Chabad Chaim said that's okay. So the Chabad Chaim said that's okay. So Rabbi X can say, if he feels it's proper in his community, that Torah Shabbat is also okay. It was an absolute prohibition, and the Chabad Chaim couldn't have permitted Torah Shabbat Sabbath either. Have your choice. To me, therefore, that strictly speaking, there's no prohibition. Not Torah Shabbat Sav, not Torah Shabbat Peh. But it all depends on the Ha'ras Chochem. The Chochem has to understand what's flying. And what's flying often depends upon what we saw earlier in our earlier sources. What is the motivation of the woman who wants to study the Torah Shabbat Sav or the Torah Shabbat Peh? That was the lengthy citation we had earlier from Gedolei Yisrael, a number of Gedolei Yisrael. This Aji's point. The quote from the Torah Tamima. I mentioned earlier Then we have the quote from the quite a few different quotations. The basic point running through them all was what was she doing? Why did she want to do what she was doing? She really wants to study and to learn for a good cause, then in my opinion, based on these sources, there's no prohibition of Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, what's the bottom line after all this? In my opinion, and I know it's my opinion, which has been rejected by everybody on different sides, some think it's too strict, some think it's too lenient, some think that's how it is. Life. Before I forget, was it Shuvas Marashal, who was a great, also Rabbanis Miriam, who was a great woman at the time, talks to Yeshiva Kamashon, the Rosh Yeshiva for a few years, the Yashua Ba'ol, Vilon Lefnam, she sat behind the Mechitza. The Amra Allah Khalafne Bahura Buflag. Do you believe this? There's a woman Rosh Hashiva, and she sat behind the Mechitza. And the boy would sit on the other side and listen to her Shia. Who is this? Well, the Marshal lived same time as the Ramah, in the 1500s. Obviously, this was sometime before that.
Why did she have to sit behind the Mechitza?
But in those days, they were very strict about machitza, see, men and women. So, what's the bottom line of all this? It seems to me that you can't, it's not fair to compare one situation to another. But, my opinion is that the standard yeshiva curriculum, grades 1 through 12, should not have a Torah Shebaal Peh. That's not fair. Because Chumash Rashi is Torah Shebaal Peh. Even Mishnah is Torah Shebaal Peh. My primary, I think Mishnah is very flexible, depending on a lot of different considerations. My main thing is with Gemara. Gemara is very difficult. Requires a lot of effort just to get to a certain point of understanding. And therefore, my opinion is that something which women should not be encouraged to study. And therefore, I don't think it's proper they should have it in grade 1 through 12. I don't even think it should be an option. Once it's an option, it becomes, you know, oh, like the advanced class, the honors class, everyone's going to run into it. And, I don't think it should even be an option. It's an option, too. I don't think it's even advisable as such. When a young lady finishes high school, 17, 18 years old, so we all know that there are different options of different schools, especially in Eretz Yisrael. Some schools have this view, some have the other view. My personal view is, again, although I'm telling you up front, there's no prohibition, strictly speaking, in my opinion. Nevertheless, I feel there's so much Torah should be studied priority level, that women should not be encouraged to study Gemara as such. Yeah, they need a piece of Gemara to explain what is Rashi quotes the Gemara. Then what they do is they zirak, that's their compromise there. They zirak the Gemara. You don't carry, don't hold the Gemara chas v'shalom in your hand. You zirak the Gemara. You zirak 5,000 sheets of Gemara, you have all shas, but only a zirak. Oh, that's a good point. I'm not opposed to individual, not on a classroom basis or a widespread basis. She wants to study Gemara, not from a Xerox, from a book, in order to be able to better understand how to teach whatever she's teaching, whether it be Chumash and Rashi, things of this nature. Okay. But you know what it is now. Everyone goes to Eretz Yisrael. Everyone. Is anyone in this room adopted in Eretz Yisrael in Yeah, one out of the exceptions. Next year, I believe. So everyone goes to Eretz Yisrael. Not everyone's a teacher. Everyone goes. So everyone goes to Eretz Yisrael. We try to emphasize what the students need. And they don't need the Gemara so much. Not one teacher who's going to have to know how the Gemara is going to teach better when she becomes a teacher on a higher level. So we'll worry about it privately. Let me tell you, there are women teachers who are great, great Torah scholars. They know so much. Without studying Gemara from the text, they know it. They pick up, but they pick up even Gemara from the Mishnah Rashi and from the Ramban. That's the in thing, that Ramban. Remember, Rav David Lipschitz that time to complain that the women of Ramban better than his Talmidim. It was embarrassing. Going on a date, she's throwing the Ramban, he doesn't know what she's talking about. it's awful, but. And there's so much to be learned in Medrash and Halacha and so much. The Torah is so vast. So here's my major objection. That seems to me, this is from observation, I've seen it, that unfortunately there are some individuals, and I don't want to put everything in one of this category, I'm going to be careful with my expression. There are some individuals who insist that women study the Gemara so that they should be the same as men. I make any distinctions. The education should be exactly the same. Now to me, this borders on the heresy which Rav Moshe spoke concerning mitzvahs. So what do you mean? Don't tell me I'm exempt, I think I'm obligated. A serious issue. Fortunately, compounding this observation of mine is the fact that some of the, I'm saying the word some, I don't want to be misinterpreted, some of the individuals who are involved in this kind of education, which is, in a sense, egalitarian, the women should study exactly the same as the men should study, so the egalitarianism goes beyond the study of Gemara. Certain other rituals and other things, and we saw a whole series of manifestations. That's a serious problem. And I want to emphasize that. I'm not saying that Chas V'Shalom, that every woman who studies Gemara is egalitarian in the first place, or that the other manifestations, which are more insidious, are in fact forthcoming. Chas V'Shalom, I didn't say that. But there is some kind of a correlation. Therefore, this would fit in exactly what the Chazal tell us. Chazal tells us, the Rambam says, women will study the Torah Shabbat. We're afraid they'll take it and they'll use it in a way which is not appropriate. But this is exactly what's happening. Not by all, by some. The Rambam didn't say by all. The Rambam said all women who study Torah Shabbat are going to abuse it or somehow come to wrong conclusions. He never said that. He said some. In those days, some may have been a majority. Women weren't so attuned to this kind of study. In today's world, that the women are much more sophisticated. As they always like to say, the Chofetz Chaim says, the women who had to read and write Polish, had to teach them Chumash, what do you do when they get a PhD? No shots by the same kind, you have to know so much. Alright, so instead of knowing Shas, you can know Gans Tanakh. Who knows all Tanakh here? All Tanakh, Shulchanorba, there's plenty to know. It can be known and understood on a high intellectual level too. I believe in this. It should be a high intellectual level. I don't believe that women should just be taught to memorize the Kitzur and that's all. I do believe that since there is a high intellectual level in secular studies, there should be a high intellectual level in Jewish studies too. But I think it's going to be really a great misinterpretation for one to say that only in Gemara is there depth in Jewish studies. That's for sure. There's depth in Jewish studies in so many different other areas. It seems to me that's what the way we should proceed. Plenty of opportunities in that area. I'm talking now in general. I want to reiterate that there's both there can be exceptions, both communally, exceptions individually. Explain to us some of my hesitations on it. I think someone who really has a keen eye on the Jewish scene today, all these feminists and egalitarian and these new things, I just read, just got, you know, the new newspapers, which are free. You don't have to subscribe to them, they can find on your doorstep. So I saw a thing, I was just called the Jewish Sentinel, I believe, right? Is that the Sentinel? I'm going to discuss it that last year they had the lady in the towels and show on the front cover of something or other, Moment, or things, or, and they had the woman wants to get smicha and yeshiva and all that. Let's leave that out. That's already last year, so the year before, so whatever it was. Now the new thing, they have something which I thought was very nice up front. The women gather together for Rosh Chodesh. And the Rosh Chodesh, some of the new thing, that's wonderful. You know, the many shuls, they have the coming Rosh Chodesh, and they have a shir, and it's wonderful. And they opened up the inside, and oh my God, they're having all kinds of wild things. Just, you know, run by Reform rabbis, mostly of the female variety. And you have certain Orthodox women who say, yeah, it's great, you can do this, do this, and I'm going to be completely against the halacha. And now it's not against the law, it's against the spirit of the law, and then all this comes, yes! Because now that women are studying the Talmudic texts on their own, they don't have to be under the men anymore, and they can do it. This is exactly what the Rambam was speaking about. The Rambam, the Chazal expression, Chacham Odif Minavi. The wise man is superior to a prophet. The Rambam foresaw all this. So today I have a delicate balance. You can't just tell a woman to, you know, like in the old days, move from the her mother's apron to her husband's house, like when he's got married at 12. Never left out. You can't do that anymore. So you have to have strong study of Torah for women. I think it should be very strong, should be advanced. How many women know Dikduk? I mean, all the seven or eight binyanim, but they go, whoa, plenty to be learned. And it's this Jewish hashkafa. The Rambam wrote, another Gedolei Torah wrote, another Chumash with Maharal. I'm just saying, I know what's being studied in some of the girls' schools. It's deep, it's profound, it's meaningful. This, to my mind, is the proper priority. It's Torah Shalopeh, I'm not going to deny it. I'm not going to try to fake it out there. It's Torah Shalopeh, which is connected to Chumash. I don't think I really is correct. As I said before, if you're having this what I call the relativistic approach, not an absolutism that I pick up on the time, then you have to pick and choose based on what you think is appropriate. And to my mind, a significant amount of this Talmudic study, I'm not saying all of it, is related to this egalitarianism. And unfortunately, it has sometimes negative results. And therefore, I think it's not a good idea, by and large. Now that you know, all your hands are up, I said my piece. I'm ready to take it on the chin. Yes.
But if a woman has the time, or is it basically because she doesn't have the proper time to give to learning Gemara, that she can't learn Gemara? Even though I know it's, I'm not sure why, if she can learn all other Torah Shabbat Peh, why specifically she can't learn Gemara?
Let me reiterate. I did not say that studying Gemara is a violation of a prohibition against studying Torah Shabbat Peh, as it's widely accepted in certain circles. That's not what I said. I said, to my mind, the original prohibition against Torah Shabbat Peh as such is not an absolute prohibition, it's Tzibuch HaChamim, and there can be changes. But the Rambam says she shouldn't study Torah Shabbat Peh because we're afraid it may have negative results. I, for one, myself, have seen negative results coming from the study of Talmud for women. I've seen it.
What do you mean by negative results?
I was clear in my description, but I guess I'll have to repeat. That in certain institutions where Talmud study for women is considered a requirement or certainly something which is the direction of that particular institution, in that same institution, the same either students or teachers have espoused views which I believe are strongly counter to either the halacha or to the proper spirit, and I mean even in the broader sense of what the halacha has to offer. So there's a connection. It's coming out of the same wall, the same institutions. I haven't found that in schools which teach the Maral Mikra, teach the Ramban, and teach the Shmona Prokim, and teach the some of the other aspects of Torah, which we might be considered part of Torah Shabbat. Anyway, I haven't found those negative manifestations from my perspective. I caution you that there are those who disagree with me. So even in those schools which they study these things, it's not an absolute what they call Beis Yaakov, capital B, capital Y, then it's already no good. So that's their title of their opinion. I'm not quibbling with them. I don't necessarily agree to that. But I have found in the schools where the Gemara is playing a significant role in the education of women, that I've seen in many such instances negative things. So therefore I'm afraid that the Rambam is warnings are not passé. And there's a question of balance. Is it good or is it bad? So there may be some cases where it's so important, so critical for a particular woman or a group to study Gemara. So look, we do it, we hope for the best, and we'll have any negative consequences. But on a wide scale, if I've seen the negative consequences, and I'm not sure if I don't think in most cases the positives outweigh the negatives, that's why I discourage. Those will listen to me. Those 2.5 people listen to me. So I'm not discouraged. Yes?
You mentioned before that one of the things about Gemara is that you have to kind of get to a certain level in order to actually even to have any grip on it.
Right.
So it's definitely true that from Maharal and from Rambam and from whatever else, there's definitely depth. But I just wonder if, like, if people can kind of that they want to learn a skill from Gemara, as opposed to, like, not that they can't find the depth anyplace else, but that they maybe can't, like, learn how to, you know, their skill as much.
You mean textual skills or analytical skills?
Either. Probably more analytical.
Okay. Textual skills, I say they don't need it, so
right,
what do
you
do? Analytical skills? Well, you're right. I'll be the last to say that there are no analytical skills to study tomorrow. That would put me out of business. Please don't count. So, certainly are analytical skills, no question about it. However, it seems to me that the development of those analytical skills, which really to be, if you're going to do it right, you require the whole textual background. There are many yeshiva boys, I'm sorry to say, don't know how to read a piece of Gemara. They sit in the shiur, and the Rebbe's talking, ooh, ooh, wow, wow, yeah, and they're back and forth, and they don't know what, it's like a building without a foundation. They enjoy it, okay, I mean, so, better or worse, they enjoy it. I don't think, I'm not in favor of that either, frankly. I mean, you can imagine. But it's keeps them out of trouble. All right. So, I mean, fine. But when it comes to the education of women, I think that would be a joke. Bet up the boys are doing it, this abstract analysis without being rooted in the text. Which is not an ideal way. No one ever says an ideal way to study the Talmud. So the study of the text requires enormous, so many hours. It's a tremendous, tremendous achievement and accomplishment would take away from the other areas of Torah study. By the way, boys unfortunately are put is an undue emphasis on Gemara early in the education, and then they don't know anything. Terrible. They don't know Chumash and Rashi. Terrible. I think it's a terrible phenomenon. They don't know Chumash and Rashi to this. They went to Gemara too early. It's a problem. But the women have the same problem. They're not the men have the problem. So to study it with the text requires an inordinate amount of time at the expense of all the other studies, which are more important. And to study it without the text, well, it's analysis. Right. So I've given Shira Blumen an analysis of Gemara. I did it right here. We did it last week right here in the first class right here. Okay, I was just, hey, we're good. You know, you can go more, you can go less. There's no limit. But not as a Shira Kavua. A little bit here and there is enough.
But that maybe in terms of actually studying the text in order to apply to other things, is that like a crazy idea just because...
No, it's not crazy. Crazy.
Like, in other words, like, yes, learning from the text, but in order to apply to like in terms of skills for Chumash and for how they do it for whatever else, in other words, because that's a way of thinking.
Oh, I understand. Well, if you learn, anyone ever learned Parsha Mishpatim? Anyone learn Parsha Mishpatim? Anybody?
Mm-hmm.
Rashi maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Half Baba Kama. A lot of back and forth, the Shah Tak, the Shah Boy, this way, that way, you know, this Mazak Shah, or Bor, or Mesh, you know. Yeah, I've been there some degree of that. You want more? I'm not opposed. You're right. that more is usually better. But unfortunately, there's a downside over here, which I've seen myself in some cases, not at all. And therefore, my perspective is, this is not a worthwhile enterprise. I have to tell you, there was recently a meeting with one of the great rabbeim from our circles concerning the establishment of a girls' high school. And some of the balabatim who want to establish, said, you know, don't you feel that the priority should be study of Torah Shebaal Peh? The response was absolutely not. The priority has to be Yirat Shamayim. And that's the most, he said five times, the most important part of cleanup for women should be Yirat Shamayim. Somebody asked him, but isn't it true that the only way to achieve Yirat Shamayim is the study of Torah Shebaal Peh? He said, absolutely not. How can you say such a thing? It was Yirat Shamayim for all these years without Torah Shebaal Peh. They can continue to be, he's not saying it's not a lie. He says it's not a prohibition, it's not a this, it's not that, but don't make it as if it's the end all and the be all. That's a big problem. Yes? It's certainly ordinarily that's how good halach is learned. Learned in depth. You start the Gemara, then you go to the Shulchan Aruch and whatever. But as far as women are concerned, it seems to me that from time to time, it would be very instructive to have the Gemara to know where the halach is coming from. That's where the Xerox comes in. Sometimes the halacha, it's hard to understand. Let's see what the Gemara said. So that's why I'm not opposed in principle to an occasional Talmudic analysis or Talmudic text being brought into explain what the basis of the halacha is. I'm not opposed at all. But it's
as if you shouldn't make a
sacred
class where you just learn
halacha
that way.
You know, there are such classes, even if they do. I don't think that's so advisable. That's my opinion. Yes? Absolutely.
So why
any yeshiva that doesn't teach that their students Yirat Shamayim, male or female, is remiss. The thing is, when it comes to men's education, a man is required to study the entire corpus of Torah, the Tzavon Baal Peh. And B, there have to be among the students in the yeshiva, those who will in fact grow to be great scholars in Torah, to be rabbanim and machanchim, etc., etc. So therefore, from time immemorial, the cheder or the yeshiva tana always taught these things and put an emphasis on them. Some will in fact master, and others will unfortunately not be served properly. You're right. For many students, the yeshiva is not the perfect education. They haven't expected to become a Talmud Chacham. For those who can't, they really be much better off emphasizing Chumash and then de-emphasizing the Gemara. But you know how it is. My son, what is my son? He's stigmatized. That's an unfortunate thing. 100%. And therefore, there is an obligation to teach Torah Shabbat Tzav in depth. So the Talmidim, unfortunately, I say it to you again, unfortunately, some of these schools that are the push, the rush, who can study Gemara first? I just recently visited a school not far from here, and they don't learn Gemara, not in third grade, not in fourth grade, until the very last few month or two of fifth grade. The only reason they do it then is because they should be embarrassed when they go to summer camp. Why? You're not studying Gemara? You're retarded or something like that? When I was in the school, I went around to the class that was studying Chumash and Rashi in depth. I wish my son had that kind of an education. That was the old time education. So I was told when I was a kid. What they taught us, the first year living in the Chumash, we study Hebrew language. That's it, Safa, what they call. You know, Ani Holech, Ata Holech, At Holechas, you know, that kind of stuff, and another than this, and Safa, and Tiktok. That's the basis. And after a year or two, you ain't start with the Chumash. And then you can postpone it for the mission, but you have to know basics. In other words, we live in an old and awful, everything's upside down. A lot of problems to have with education, for men and for women. But the point is well taken. Yes?
Yeah, I'm not really clear on exactly what the problem is per se with Gemara as opposed to any other part of Torah Shebaal Peh. Is it possible that if the whole, all the disagreements and controversy and everything surrounding women learning Gemara, that as a big of an issue, that wasn't really an issue. If it was just some women learn this, just as they learn Rashi, would it possibly be more palpable to people? I mean, yeah. Is that what the problem
maybe
is, or is that
right.
something
maybe
inherent in Gemara?
Maybe it's the very objection which caused the tumult. But I don't think it's correct. I'll tell you why. Because the classical Rabbanim objected to Mishnayos too. And yet, women learn Mishnayos straight through. My wife learned Mishnayos when she went to school in Halai. Because this is 21. Now Halai is, was it after? Was it half or half? Whatever it is. Yeah. This is going back a number of years. We won't say how many. A number of years. It was never an issue. You know why? Because it wasn't the same as men's education. That's why. The very fact that the difference existed, even though it was Torah Shabbat, it was great. It developed some skills in the Mishnah Hebrew and some concepts and this and that. That was a problem.
So then what's the problem with why?
I'm telling you the problem. The egalitarianism is the problem. That's exactly the problem. They want to break down the barriers and have no more distinction between men and women. Okay, that's exactly why it's a Shemachava. That's exactly what's at stake. And that's exactly why I object. And it's exactly why these negative consequences are resulting. It didn't result in the Mishnah. They started Mishnah, the Torah Shema Peh for years, decades, never a problem.
So there was less of a deal made out of it than people made.
But I'm explaining why it can't be less of a deal made out of it.
But can it be if people change their... People just aren't as vehement, you know, people just like calm down a little bit, like, in a, I don't know, a few years or something. If it's possible, if now... It's more powerful that women learn Mishnah, women learn Rashi, women learn that. Then,
right.
For a few years down the road, women can learn Gemara, and it won't
maybe
be a problem.
Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Halavai should be right. So far, I don't see it happening. But if it happens, it happens. You know, a lot of things which started off as being problematic change for the better. Look, let's be honest. When the Chavetz Chaim started Beis Yaakov, there was vehement opposition to it. Absolutely vehement opposition to the Beis Yaakov. Despite the Chofetz Chaim, with the Gerer Rebbe, with the Belzer Rebbe, I don't care how many Rebbes, who were traditionally who were absolutely opposed, unalterably, vehemently. Now, even Satna's girls' schools, they have a different curriculum, but everyone, there's no sect of Orthodox, in Orthodox, there's no school for girls. It's impossible. But things did change, and even those who objected originally said, she should stay with the mother, and then she'd go and get married at age 12. But that's why this doesn't work anymore. Some things can change. Yes?
Would you say that in the classroom and people are making choices, that there is no problem?
Okay. So therefore, it seems to me that and the next thing they want to have is what they call a bet midrash. That's the next step. The one, you know, snowballs, and therefore the next thing when they finish school here, they go to other institutions where they full-time Gemara study, which is considered a more advanced thing, and those institutions are not having anything going on there without mentioning any names. So I'm not interested in encouraging that. So therefore I say stop over here instead of stop over there. Let's look at the Rambam men. Yes?
Is it possible
to make a differentiation
between what men learn in general, just in terms of like...
I just said it. It's a Xerox copy, so it's considered something which is sort of transient. It's needed now to understand the Lumish and Rashi. But it's not you sitting down in a regular program, which is the first step to approximating the, what I call the egalitarian view. I think I said enough, and see you next week. Next week we'll talk about Sears. How's that?
the book.
Hi, Barry. Mr. First said, he says, today's class is very, very hot.
One of the topics found in this wonderful work, Halicha Sfas Yisrael, is called Tzius. Tzius is what the Chassidim call the Tzius is divided here to a number of different chapters. And we'll try to analyze it bit by bit. I had in mind actually to zero, but I forgot completely.
Mr. President, he says today's lecture is, today's class is very, very hot.
One of the topics found in this wonderful work of Ichas Bas Yisrael, it's called Tzius. Tzius means what? Tzius is divided here to a number of different chapters. And we'll try to analyze it bit by bit. I had in mind actually to zero, but I forgot completely. Other things in my mind. Knock this one out. To zero some a page in the Mishnah Berurah. Maybe we can do it, I remember later. We'll do with dots, they have a vision with dots, and it's much easier. The Shulchan Aruch says in the beginning of Siman Ayin Hay in Orachayim. Orachayim are the laws of really of daily daily life, the way of life, Orachayim. And we're learning the Hilchos Kriya Shema. In the Hilchos Kriya Shema, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Gemara Masech the Brachos, the Chov Dalet. Says tefach the isha erva. Tefach means the size of the fist. Tefach the isha means a woman, and erva means it's considered something which is inappropriate when Kriya Shema is being recited. That's the Gemara. We have to do some background before we get to any more details in the Shulchan Aruch. We have to go take a couple of steps back. The Gemara asks a question. You read it on Gemara's, yeah? The Gemara asks a question. What do you mean, Tefach Misha Erev? You mean that it is prohibited to look, to stare, to gaze, to istakel, as it is a Hebrew word, the istakel, at a Tefach, the side of the fist of the body of a woman which is exposed? No. That's wrong, says the Gemara. Because you can't even look at an etzbaktana, pinky, of a woman. That's much less than a tefach. Says the Gemara, no. The Gemara, tefach mishever, refers to ishto ula kriyashma. His own wife. Obviously, with his own wife, there's no prohibition against staring or gazing under normal circumstances. But for Kriya Shema, it's prohibited. So in order to understand this, which is the basis of the entire analysis, we have to take a step backwards. There are different levels, what we call histaklus. That's the word, histaklule, but to stare, to gaze. And you'll forgive me if I speak very openly, but I told you at the beginning we're going to talk about all kinds of things. So hope you won't be offended. The Gemara tells us that histaklus, a man staring at a woman, is prohibited. There are two separate Gemaras. We're about three Gemaras away. There's two separate Talmudic statements prohibiting istaklus. One is a Gemara Brachos, again a Brachos, with an Avud base. But the Gemara derives from a pasuk we say every day. Lo sasur achrei einechem. Lo sasur achrei einechem. Don't stray after your eyes. That's a Gemara Brachos. Another Gemara. Gemara of the Sechta Bolazar, Tavchot. The Gemara there derived the prohibition of Istakos from a completely different Pasuk. The Pasuk says in Sefer Devarim, in the context of the encampment of the Jewish people going to war, the Pasuk says, V'nishmarta mikol da'orah. make sure to stay away from anything bad. What does it mean? Something bad? What's bad? So, the Gemara says that in this war, and as we already implied before, war was a male activity. Women are exempted by and large without any obligation to go to war. So the Shmata Mikoldova Ra is something which is aimed specifically at men, as opposed to Velosa Suru, which presumably applies to women as well as men. That's going to come forth in a moment. What is this in the Shema to be called over? Oh. So the very next pasuk speaks about what the Torah euphemistically refers to as Mikre Loyla, which is otherwise known in the Gemara, a phrase you may have come across somewhere in your studies, as Hotsoa Zera Levatola, the spilling of the male seed for no purpose. And the Gemara feels, and of course it's borne out by facts, that if the man is guilty of being mistakel, of gazing, staring at a woman, there's a very increased likelihood that the next step will be this Mikre Loyla. Now, one of the Rishonim, known as the Smach, Sefer Mitzvahs Kotah, points out that there are two separate verses really indicate two completely different violations. And Rav Moshe Feinstein, that Tzal, says the same thing on his own. The only time one violates Los Asur Achrei Einecha, these Gedolim say, is if it's what's called the Shame's Nus, for the purpose of immorality. Unfortunately, we know this to be true. There are people who engage in immoral acts. Before they engage in the actual immoral act itself, they may gaze upon the subject of the immoral act. Whether it be a man upon a woman or a woman upon a man. To make an evaluation. Whether this immoral act is something which they want to do or don't want to do. So the gazing itself, the staring itself, is a violation of Los Asur Achrei Einecha. And if one gazes upon a woman, not for the purpose of immorality, chas v'sholom, purely for the purpose of enjoying the beauty of the woman, then there's no violation of below Sasur Achrei Einecha, according to these Gedolim, is a violation of the Nishmat that we call Dovarot. As we mentioned before, the former prohibition applies to men and women equally, whereas the latter prohibition, simply based upon the biology, the anatomy, the physiology, applies to men and not to women. More than that, when I was growing up, and I think it's still true today in certain locations, but there was caution against certain violations of the laws of modesty. The warnings by my rebbeim in high school, and there was big signs to echo these warnings in Eretz Yerushalayim. Do such and such, you are in violation of a terrible prohibition, which is called Yehoreg V'Aliyavah, a cardinal sin. There are only three such cardinal sins. A Avodah Zarah, not Avodah Zarah. Shvicha Zayim, murder, not that. What is it then? Gili Arayis, but not really Gili. It's called Abiz Rayu, the Gili Arayis. It's more ancillary or related to immorality. So this, according to the simple interpretation, so from Moshe writes, Lossa Surah Kwainechem is in Abizraya of Gilead rights, because it would lead to Gilead rights, that's its whole intention. Whereas with the Shmartan be called Overall, it's not in Abizraya of Gilead rights. The violation, yes, but it's not every violation in the world, is Yorah Vayyavah. So for example, when you were warned in school, don't you dare go to the beach, that was the warning in the 1960s. Don't you dare go to the beach. But it's Yehoram Valyavar. So was that an exaggeration or was it true? I guess it depends why you go to the beach. If someone is interested in going to the beach as a prelude to immorality, then there's some question, is Yehoram Valyavar? Because the immorality never takes place, ultimately. But if he's gone to the beach because he wants to go swimming, he also doesn't mind looking at what he looks, then it's a violation. The Shvat would be called Dabara, but it would not be really Yorah Vayyavar, despite what these rabbis said. That's according to Rav Moshe, and hundreds of years before the Smak, say the Mrs. Kov. However, the Mishnah Berurah, at the beginning of Siman Ayin Hei, called Sipkot Zayin. It would be worthwhile to get some of this. Yeah. Here he writes that someone who looks at the Etzpaktana, we spoke of earlier, that little finger with the intention of Lehonos, of enjoying it, is in violation of those Asura Freyne. Violates even the stronger prohibition. I imagine he's under the impression that even such a seemingly innocent kind of a stare can lead ultimately to immorality. If that's the case, he really would be Yehoram Vayyavar. As they warned us to have all the signs of Me'er Shoresh.
This one right here? Yeah, I got this one. Wait, which one now?
It'll be prohibited for women as well as men. If in fact this is the prohibition. It's true, though, that as we saw before, the Mishnah Berurah limited the prohibition to what we call the Skavein Lehonos, the Stakav Lehonos, in order to enjoy it. To enjoy it. Clearly, the impression is that if that's not his intention, it would be permissible. Only problem is, one may fear certain circumstances, but staring without the intention to enjoy could lead to a kavana lehanos, to intention to enjoy. That's what Rav Moshe writes in one of his shuvos, that it's a problem. So there are some Rabbanim, or even non-Rabbanim, would never look at a woman, period. Never look. They start at least to gaze, to stare for an extended period of time. To look for a second, if it was that. But let's say someone comes to the Rav to ask a shayla. And the shayla can be involved, shayla can take a half an hour to get through the shayla. So what does he do? So, Rav Moshe looked at the woman. Because he wasn't concerned that it's going to lead to an inappropriate kind of a stare. Sat Rebbe, for example, would turn the other way. Or look down. The various gedolim have different postures concerning this very important question. This, of course, applies to a part of the woman's body that's ordinarily exposed, which is the finger. Face for that matter. However, parts of the body that are ordinarily covered, then, as Rav Moshe writes in the Sefer, it's prohibited to stare at those parts even without the intention to have any enjoyment. That's why the Gemara says, the Shulchan Aruch records, that women are, what they used to do, called, they only do in the laundry. They didn't put in the washing machine those days. They used to go to the river and pick up their dresses, they should get wet, and they do the laundry. So a man shouldn't be passing by there. Shouldn't be around. Now, interestingly, when the Gemara speaks about the prohibition against looking at a woman, Rashi there says, Aisha Sish, a married woman. Very problematic. Why did Rashi mention a married woman? What about a single woman? A single woman is okay. That's not my question. Queen Megadim asked that question. One of the preeminent Polskim writes on the Shulchan Aruch. Queen Megadim. Well, the answer might be that if the woman is unmarried, it's conceivable, it's possible, and there's no prohibition to stare at her. What's the case? Well, maybe you're interested in marrying her. Shulchan Aruch says explicitly that if a man is interested in marrying a woman, it is permissible to stare at her, to see if she's pretty in the eyes of the beholder, as long as it's not a kind of a look which might lead to morality. Now, that's why the mad woman is mentioned by Rashi, because that's always prohibited. I'd like to analyze for a few moments. This is all background. This is really very important. I'd like to analyze for a few moments why is it that a man is permitted to stare at the woman if he's contemplating the possibility of marrying her. Are you allowed to eat pig? You have to go on a date. All they have is pig. Pork. So, well, look, after marrying, I'm married, so I can have pork. What do you say about that, huh? Anybody? No, right? No. Can't do it. So you can't eat the pork, so then how can you look at her in a way which ordinarily wouldn't be allowed to look? That's the question. I believe the answer to this question is a somewhat sensitive issue. That the prohibition is called, as we said before, Otsar Zera Levatola. The key word here is Levatola, but for no purpose, for no reason. The Gemara describes a case, a very interesting case, in the Sefer Yevamos. A fourth Gemara. The Gemara in the Sefer Yevamos, there was a case of a man, they weren't sure if he was permitted to marry. The question whether he was what we call a psua daka, you may have learned about these things, but a certain injury to the procreative organ is considered ineligible to marry. And they had to test it out. And the only way to test it out was that he should be motzi zera. And the Gemara says that they didn't. It's permissible. How could that be? So the answer is not called the batal. All the way, the zera is ultimately procreative, not children. Only way he can have children if he marries. Only way he can marry to be allowed to marry. Only way he can allow him to marry if we demonstrate that his organs are healthy. And that can only be by the old Tzar Zara. So it's not called the Batola. It's one, A, it's B, it's C, it's D, it's not called the Batola. So that's the case, it seems, one might argue. That if the man is required to get married, Torah requires the man to have him to get married, to have children. And in the circumstance that he finds himself, he can't marry a woman without looking at her. Even Hasidim don't allow it. Because the Gemara doesn't allow it. The Gemara said he has to look at his wife before he married, otherwise she may be unappealing to him and he'll end up in a divorce. That's the show. Even though his looking at her may have this negative consequence, albeit presumably unintentional, the big revival which the Pasuk speaks, nevertheless it's permissible. That's not called Levatola, because there's no other way for him to fulfill the ultimate mitzvah of marriage and procreation. There's an interesting parallel to this which I will not discuss, although I have a casual glance. Somebody in this room was discussing it. One of these other courses. Who else takes another class in here? The Yavashel Shlomo with a whole chart and this and that. Talks about birth control. Comes up. Something some other rabbi discussed it here in this class. And there's the whole issue of potential violation of Tzozele Matola in certain methods of birth control. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva when she writes, well, if it's dangerous for this woman to have a child, then this method which would otherwise be prohibited becomes permissible. You may ask, why is it permissible? If it's prohibited, it's prohibited. It's like eating pork. So Rav Moshe explains that under these circumstances, the only way he can live with his wife is if there's some kind of a barrier. Therefore, would not be characterized as levatala under those circumstances. Things can change. Circumstances can vary. In my opinion, this is really the best heter, if there is one, of chos and kala spending time together. So our good friends, the chassidim, even the modern ones, they have, five, six dates between the time they meet first and the time they get engaged. But once they get engaged, by real chassidim, that's it. Once they're engaged, that's it. And they make a decision. So it was vague, slowly, patiently, it took a long time, a few weeks, and they made a decision. So once the decision is made, there's no reason for Kassir anymore. Cool. Usually flies off to Eretz Yisrael, or to send Yeshiva somewhere, and he comes back with a chazana. That's the way it should be. Why should they see each other after they're already engaged? I mean, they made a decision. That's it. Gemarno. So some say, well, there's no violation of his status because they're going to ultimately get married. Since she already gave him commitment to marry him, this is what they call pas de salo, he already needs to do something which he knows is going to ultimately be something which is completely permissible. So therefore, it's not going to do anything which is wrong, or he won't need anything wrong. That's a difficult answer, in my opinion. My parent was difficult. My answer was, that's just the way it has to be. Not in a Hasidic circle. In a Hasidic circle, you can get away with it. If he's in a, what do you want to call it, a more modern circle, maybe he's even a student at Yeshiva, maybe she's even a student at Stern College, maybe. You just can't get away with this business. I'll see you about a chasana. You're going to engage in what? See you about a chasana. I don't think it's going to fly. Maybe if the woman is a tzedekah, she'll say, fine, see you then. But if she doesn't, and the relationship was considered sort of de rigueur, and they had maintained their see each other regularly during the engagement period. So we once again suggest this possibility. That's the necessary preface towards marriage. The same as a chassidim that went from one date to five. Why did they do that for? Too many divorces, that's why. They realize that it's not like in the old days where they were just, you can raise the shit up, 1, 2, 3, look at it once, good. It doesn't work that way, even there are very few chassidim that even today. They realize it just doesn't work. The world has changed somewhat. So now we'll change a little bit more. So, would not be categorized as a levatola, in my opinion. Okay, as an aside, it's a very important aside. We ultimately will discuss this issue of contraception that certainly is part of women in halacha, but it will come to some more details concerning this. Now, we've so far described three different kinds of staring.
Pardon me for being so specific, but that's the only way to learn these halachas. The worst is the shame's nus. It's a violation of those surah reinachem, terrible. Then comes the shame hanoah, for the purpose of enjoyment. It's bad, Torah prohibition, but not as bad. Probably not your argument, Yahweh. It's about their rights. Wouldn't apply to a woman, we said, according to this analysis, where it's impossible, this whole idea of the Matol. And third and final, there is a staring, not even for the purpose of hanoah, which strictly speaking is permissible, but that's what child and it shouldn't lead to the next step, which is a shame on them. Now we have three different types. Now that we call, yes? A man is going to class, and the female lecturer. She's lecturing, he's looking at her, looking at her, not interested in the handoff, he just wants to pass the course. Huh? That's the question, is that, so we assume that's permissible in and of itself, and the possible prohibition might be, it may lead to something more than that. That depends on who the person is, what this relationship is, okay. Aside from these three types of staring, there's also something which is called re'iyah. Real if be too most of course. He's looking, he doesn't he sees. Not intended, no premeditated stare, he just sees. Of course you may ask, well, what's to discuss? I mean if he sees, what can he do about it? We're blindfolded. Well, what can he do? Well, the answer is he maybe should avoid that street. Right, well, that city. Certain times of the year especially. There's no alternative. What's the status there? So, the Mishnah Berurah quotes over here again in the same Sifat Zayin, Re'iyah Ba'alma Lefi Tumo, he calls it. This is a seed, without even pretending to really stare. So then, it's really okay. This is what's called so far the finger, the face, etc. But the pre-Megadim says, parts of the body which are normally covered, even this Ria Ba'alma is prohibited. Even this is just looking for a second, right? You know, which you can't, this is almost unavoidable, is also prohibited. I mean, what can you do? What you can do is try to avoid going to those places. Try the best you can. It's not always easy, but try. Chazon Ish says it's prohibited, but for a different reason. The male human nature is such that even the casual look for a second might lead to a more prolonged and prohibited stare. General background. Okay? It's important to go through this background, I reiterate, because now we'll be able to understand the next issue. Very important. We're talking about right now. If you have any questions, now's a good time to ask. Yes?
We're talking about pre-Ivana, we're talking about parts of the body that are normally covered. Mm-hmm. So there's normal for like everybody in the world, and then there's like normal for us.
Okay, we'll come to that. Back to the next topic of discussion. Yes.
It seems like that you're the only one that you didn't mention. I was talking about, I mean, the Obama that's about parts of the body that are normally covered.
Right.
And then about parts of the body that are normally
covered. Right. Until now we were discussing parts which are normally uncovered. When it comes to Ria Ba'alma, not even, you don't even want to gaze or stare. You just happen to see it. So then it's obviously permissible if it's a part which is normally uncovered. Part normally covered, doesn't say explicitly anywhere, not so explicit, but the prima donna prohibited, the chazanish prohibited, although perhaps for different reasons. And the bottom line, it should be avoided if it's at all possible. Now, of course, this is the shulchan aruch for men I'm telling you about. And the only part of it we discussed until now applies to women. But it's important to know the shulchan aruch for men too. Especially in these areas. Very important. Yes?
Right. You said about Los Asura that it applies, that it's Yad Val Yavo. No, I'm saying it applies to...
Yad Val Yavo.
Right. So is this, if given a situation where either the situation is either look or be killed, you have to
be killed
rather than...
That's correct. Even? That's only if you're told to look for the purpose of immorality, you'll be killed. So you can just look without the purpose of immorality. You can even close your eyes, it's not going to make a difference. You're not going to try to make you look. Maybe don't focus, I don't know why. By the way, yes?
In the category of a man who's looking at a woman because he potentially will marry her, so if that's okay, that's only okay for a one-time thing, to see if she's beautiful once. It doesn't have to be
well, that's if he was the typical man of 100 years ago in a nice Hasidic home.
Today,
what can I say? We read as Hadoros. We're not on the same level as we were on before. And therefore, nowadays, people are not at such a high level. I got to tell you that someone who I know very well told me that Eretz Yisrael, in the not Hasidic, yeshiva circles, I don't know, I'm just telling you what it was told to me some years back, that the custom they have is, I'm not kidding, I'm just telling you what I was told to you. I'll tell you, you should be offended if it's never happened to you. The custom that I was told is that when they the boy goes on the first date with the girl. So A, it's held in the girl's house. That we know already, that's already, you may have heard of before, but it's more than that. He doesn't look at her. He looks down. Sorry, I don't know how this works exactly. And then, if he talks to her for an hour without even looking at her, I don't know if you do on the phone, it's much more comfortable, it seems to me. Go on the phone for an hour. And then, if the phone conversation goes well, then they set up the date. What's the logic behind that? The logic is that nine times out, well, it doesn't work right, but one time out of eight, it doesn't work out. And therefore, why should this man have visions of all these women going through his head? He went, I was just wondering, Rachel, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, Hannah, why should he have all these images in his mind? He has them in the phone. I was outside the phone, because go to the house, I'm talking, I'm speaking, I just call her up. But then after the phone conversation, it's not well, she's doing well. Then they'll kind of figure out, and either talk in the house, go out, whatever they do. You know what? It's not a crazy idea. I mean, it's going to work for us, but it's not a crazy idea. We view it as being inappropriate for a young man to call up a young lady, talk to her on the phone for an hour, and then say, it was nice talking to you. In our circles, the minute he calls up, that's already a commitment to go out. But sometimes there are young men who say, I called her up after 15 minutes. So now what they do is they call up for 2 minutes. Okay, I'll meet you at this place. So, boom, 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 hang up. But other than told me, they get on the phone, they talk for half an hour, they see right away this is going nowhere fast, and they'd love to just get out of the whole situation. What are you going to do? You already called up. So this call which way. Well, there's a problem as far as Kriyat Shema is concerned. That's a simple interpretation.
Well, the question is that he's not allowed to look at the other women anyway. Like, Kabbalah Chomer said Kriyat Shema. Like, why? Like, this distinction for Kriyat Shema for him for other women, I just don't understand.
No. We said before that if the man is looking at this other woman and flesh and the tefach is exposed, that it constitutes a problem with respect to Kriyat Shema. You're right. It constitutes a problem all the time. But what's new here in the Gemara is that if he's looking at this other woman, according to the first shot we gave, and is less than a tefach exposed, it's a separate problem for Kriyat Shema. Maybe I have to recite the Kriyat Shema all over again. Just for example. Everybody with me? Now comes the clincher.